No wannabes here with some not so nice advice for your writing career. To be clear, no punches will be pulled, but the punch may be spiked. How they like before they get on the mic. To my left, we got the mighty Mer Lafferty. And if I piss her off, believe me, she'll come after me. And her co-host, Matt Evan Wallace, on the right. Yes, she may be half as hype as she can take him in a fight. So settle in, folks, buckle in and boot up. Time to meddle in a way to make your writer shut up. It's hard work, but the perk is that it's fun and exciting. Facebook will still be there when you're done writing. Ditch Diggers! Ditch Diggers!
Coming to you live from the Christmas tree farm that borders the long, lonely road of loneliness, it is the Ditch Diggers with Mer Lafferty and Matt Wallace in the dark, dark end days of the year. I'm so cheerful. Hi, Matt!
Hi, Mer. I just love that someone was like, you know, this whole lonely road of loneliness thing? I'm going to open up a Christmas tree stand right here.
No, it's not the stand. It's just the farm. They're growing here.
Farm. They're growing.
They'll be sold somewhere else.
That's somehow worse or better. Like, where are we getting our Christmas trees this year? Oh, there's a great Christmas tree farm right off the lonely road of loneliness. We'll just order them from there. I don't know. I think it's the tears everyone cried. That great soil. It's just great for growing Douglas firs.
Oh, God.
So, and then I also like the idea that we're perusing Christmas trees on the lonely road of loneliness.
It is the season.
It is the season. The dark days, apparently.
The funny thing is, I'm not even that.
Get the year. We're Lafferty. I understand.
I hope everybody's holiday season is bright and happy.
I do, too. I'm fucking over it, though, Mer. It's really sad, because I love the holidays. I love Christmas. Christmas is my thing.
Me
holidays,
too.
Although, you know, that's... I love the holiday season. We have all these fucking decorations in the garage, and, you know, I love decorating the house and putting up the tree and getting festive as fuck, and I have no enthusiasm for it this year. November kind of burned me out, because we hosted two baby showers, and my wife is a borderline psychotic and just goes way too far with things like that, so it was a whole ordeal.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine.
Considering how she's treated
my teenager, I can't. Oh,
yeah,
my.
She can't be stopped. She won't be stopped. Like, it's to the point where the people she threw the party for just felt guilty. You know.
For the record, to those listening, Matt's talking about his wife being incredibly giving and generous and kind past the level of most people. We're not putting her down, but when she got the opportunity to be an aunt to my daughter... Well, she sent a lot of stuff. It was very sweet.
Yeah, we had to find a box for the stuff.
Fiona was very thrilled.
That would fit all the stuff. But yeah, and I will add to that, like, the party she threw, which should be more adequately classified as events, were amazing. Everybody told her she should open her own party planning business because they were, like, literally beautiful. You can go, I posted pictures of them. But it was a lot of work, is the point of that. Then we also hosted Thanksgiving in our home because we host all the holidays now. Until we die, we'll host all the holidays. I'm really excited about it. No, it's a good thing. And then, you know, Nikki quit the law firm she'd been with for 10 years, like her whole career, and got a new job, and it's like an executive level job, and that was the whole thing. My editor got fired. Mm-hmm. That was the whole thing. Yeah. Like, that all happened last month. It was just a really draining month, and we finally got the house put back together from all that shit, and I just don't want to mess with the house. I don't want to decorate anything. I don't want to mess everything up again. So I just have no enthusiasm for the holidays whatsoever, and I feel bad about it, but there's just not. I'm just resigned to it. I just don't want to this year. So
can you get out that little truck I sent you and put that on the mantle and have that be the center of the holiday festivity?
We can't do that. We said we're going to break out our Christmas mooses.
Okay.
Moose is the plural of moose, right?
I'm not sure. I think so.
It's not meeses.
No.
We know that.
That's the plural of mice.
We have two moose, Christmas moose, Humphrey and Henry. Humphrey is very large. Henry is slightly smaller. And we're probably going to put those out, and we'll get your truck out with them, and we'll put that out too. And that'll just be, we'll do like a little Christmas, like, you know, shrine oh, friend, kind of thing. But I just, beyond that, I'm not, I just don't want to do it. And it's fine. And we both agreed we should probably, like, enjoy the option now before we have children.
Right.
Where we just not decorate for Christmas and nobody gives a shit.
Right. See, I came to a realization, and it sounds so stupid because it's one of those, well, you know, it's good to breathe in and out in order to stay alive. It's one of those realizations, and saying it out loud is stupid, but I'd never really considered it until I became an adult and a parent and with money to be brought in by writing and all that stuff, which is these holidays require us to travel, shop, bake, decorate, and often indulge in parties and or movie watching. All of those things take time. And strangely enough, your normal life doesn't slow down in December. So, you know, you're thinking, I'm gonna bake so much this December, and then you realize, well, I can't bake on the weekdays. That's just don't have time. And then the weekends is like when we're shopping for the Christmas tree or Christmas shopping or blah, 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 blah. And it's like, wait, why won't life stop in order to do all this extra crap that we imply is necessary to enjoy the season? And it doesn't. So I told the family we are scheduling time to bake and watch movies this weekend because otherwise it wasn't going to happen.
That is, no, that, I think that's quite an important realization, Mer. Not as important as breathing to live, because mm-hmm. you're not going to die if you don't do that. But still, I think that's entirely worth pointing out. I think that's one of those things that's incredibly easy to lose sight of in the course of your everyday grind.
You know?
Routine is tough, man. We need it. We crave structure, especially me, because I'm basically a giant toddler. But, mm-hmm. you know, all people, I think, crave structure. But people also take things too far. I think that's our defining characteristic, is whatever good idea you can come up with, we can take it too far. And we do that. We get so structured and so into what we're doing, we lose sight of those necessary, small necessary things. And that is necessary. Baking and movies, necessary.
Yeah, definitely. My kid's going to college next year. This is my last time with her home in the whole Christmas season.
Wow, man. I know I marvel over it every time it comes up, but I don't care. It's never not gobsmacking to me that you have a child that is no longer a child that is going to college like a grown-ass adult.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Very tall adult who is taller than you.
Thanks. Very strange. Yeah, I think she stopped growing, though. At least there's
that. I hope so. Not that, I mean, you know, she can be as tall as she wants to be, but, like, it just, I feel like she had to deal with a lot in a very short span of time.
Yeah. So, this is a writing show about business.
This is a writing show about business. We pitch things so well. It's writing show about business.
I'm just saying, to get back on track, I do have a little, well, it's not necessarily news because the project still isn't announced, but I did have a talk with my editor about my current project, and it's going to take a lot of rewrites, and I have a new deadline. So hopefully the project will be announced in the new year and be scheduled for sometime in 2021.
Wow.
And someday I can talk about it, I hope.
No, you will talk about it.
I hope I can talk about it before it comes out.
I meant that as encouragement, not as a threat. Like, you will talk about it.
No, I got it. I got it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you're my friend. I already told you. It's not like you're threatening me to tell you. And I don't think you threaten me to tell our listeners either.
No, I wouldn't. And I'll all come in due course. And yes, I get to hear the things that other people don't get to hear. And I feel very special because of it. But yes, the time will come when you can shout it from the rooftop. When you can go up like that scene in Newsies and you can throw the leaflets off the roof. And you can sing the rousing. I just watched Newsies on Disney Plus. It really has nothing to do with anything. It's just that was when I reached for an analogy, that was just what was there.
That's fine. I'm going with you. I'm on board.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But no, that's good stuff. Congratulations. Preemptively.
Thank you. It's going to be a lot of work, but I'm feeling moderately positive about it.
I mean, that's the way it is, man. You never say, yeah, man, this great thing happened. It's going to be minimal effort on my part. You know? not. This is not how anything. It's never a story. It's never a story at all. Yeah, I don't really have any news as such. I have updates and experiences I can share that relate to the show, I guess. Okay. My publisher just sent me an author questionnaire, Mer. You ever gotten a questionnaire?
Oh yeah, those are fun.
They are. It's interesting because like they're like, hey, can you just answer some quick questions for us to help out the marketing department and the publicity department when we go and try to sell this book you've got coming out next year? And you're like, sure, I answer questions every day. That's a thing I know how to do. And then you open this thing, Mer, and it's like a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
It's very anxiety-inducing because they ask you all these personal questions about you and about your book and about your platform. And, you know, it's like it's also like an inventory of all your assets. And it's very long and very involved. And you start, and the more I went through reading the questions, the more I'm like, I don't have good answers to any of this shit. And it just filled me with anxiety. So that was just one of those little situations as a working writer, as an author, that just went from zero to panic in like seconds.
Yeah. Like a lot of it is, I don't know about yours, but mine have been, so what major journalists do you know from what major websites? And
yeah,
not only your local bookstores, but tell us about your hometown bookstores. My hometown didn't have a bookstore. And when I tried to get a book event at the nearest large town bookstore, which is Malaprops in Asheville, North Carolina, they booked me and then they canceled because they didn't know who I was. This is when I was with Orbit. This isn't me trying to get something going on with like self-pop. This is like Orbit says, hey, we've got a local girl. Let's do her book. And they're like, yeah, cool. And then they said, no, sorry. And so I know it's a great indie bookstore, but I don't feel entirely positive about them.
No, I wouldn't either. I also just want you to put on your business card, Mer Lafferty, local girl.
Yeah.
That's who Mer Lafferty is, boy. If you need a girl who's local, Mer's got you.
Well, in the North Carolina mountains.
Yeah, well, obviously you can't, you know. It doesn't
go far.
I just like the sentence. Orbit was like, we got a local girl here for you. No, it is. And it's like, yeah, so it's, you know, you're reading this thing and it's like, the question is like, hey, what's your website URL? And you're like, oh, that's easy. I know that. And then right below that, it's like, so how frequently do you post on your website? And you're like, oh, well, that's a whole other separate issue that requires a lot of nuance and context. And then it's like, how much traffic does your website get?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is like quicksand. I wasn't anticipating this at all. So I have to do that later today, Mer, is the bullet point of this story. And I'm not looking forward to it at all. But it's a thing I will deal with. Now, I guess that isn't news as such. Like I said, I didn't really have news. I just had experiences and working writer things to share. And that
well,
was
that's
one
still,
of them.
Yeah, that's a working writer thing. I mean, one thing that whole traffic thing gets me is like, I try not to watch that stuff because it usually just, I'll either be obsessed with it or I have to ignore it. I'm not good at just saying, oh, what's my traffic today? Okay, blah, blah, blah. And so when people ask me that, I'm like, oh, fuck, I gotta go look that up. And I look it up and I inevitably get depressed about it. And I'm like, thanks, marketing department.
Yeah, it's basically like asking an author, hey, how much do people like you? Can you go out and find out exactly how much everyone in the world likes you and then report back on that to us? Which is a perfectly fine thing to ask an author in particular, because we're not neurotic messes who obsess about shit like that.
No.
So yeah, I gotta do that. Did I have more news? Did I have more experiences to show? They don't let you stop writing during the holidays, Mer. Did you know that?
I did know that. I was in talking to my editor about my new deadline. I realized that I was taking writing over the next couple of weeks into consideration, and I thought, what the fuck was I thinking? God damn it.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's also my day job. I got to get up and do it every day, just like going to work. I saw somebody tweet, like, you know, NaNoWriMo's over. So, like, they're, like, I'm done. That wasn't the tweet. I'm paraphrasing badly.
Sure.
But the vibe I got from him was like, ah, NaNoWriMo's over, so I don't have to write anymore. And I just wanted to find them and kill them. not literally. I don't want to kill anyone. But it was just hard for me to deal with because I was like, I want to feel that way. I want to feel like, hey, it's 2 weeks before Christmas. I shouldn't have to do this shit anymore. But I have to because it's a job.
Yeah.
And that kind of segues into what we're going to talk about today, Mercy. There was a method to the madness. I knew what I was doing the whole time.
You did. You did. I was on board. Let's go. I'm strapped in.
So we wanted to talk about a few things today around kind of a central theme. The first thing is something I was thinking about earlier today because I'll often tweet, Mer. I use the goddamn Twitters. I don't know if you knew that. I do. And people very much like it, myself included. I'm not, like, separating myself from the masses on this. But people, especially writers and creators, we really like stories about how someone failed a bunch, hopefully for a long time, and then succeeded. We really like those stories, Mer.
Yeah, like J.K. Rowling living in her car once, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And the longer it went on, the better, really. Because then, you know, you can compare it to your own experiences and go, no matter where I am now, I have time to get there. And this is true. I'm not in any way disputing any of this. I'm just pointing out, I'm observing that we all like these stories because they give us hope and inspire us and keep us and can keep us grounded, which is an important thing, and keep us, you know, with having some perspective on the whole overnight success thing, which is a myth. Except when it's not. But even then, it doesn't really matter. And that leads into the whole concept of persistence, which is a very important thing, Mark. I have a picture of professional wrestler Dustin Runnels on my wall with a tattoo on his arm that says persistence, and I take great inspiration from that because I believe in persistence. But like anything, because we're people and because we can take any good idea and take it too far, I think we kind of hold up persistence as this gospel holy ideal that you have to keep going no matter what. You have to just keep pushing forward, always forward, never stop, never quit. You know, that's like, that becomes the attitude. And I was thinking today how, actually, I've quit a lot, consistently over my career. And sometimes you have to quit stuff. And it's okay to quit stuff. It's necessary to quit stuff sometimes. You feel what I'm laying down?
I feel what you're laying down. It makes a lot of sense. I always see it as banging your head against a wall that just refuses to crumble. You might have to look for a door, which, you know, if there was a door there and you're banging your head against the wall to get through, you might want to question your choices in life. But I'm more saying you try to look for a different way, around the wall perhaps, over the wall, maybe through the wall if you can find a door or a window. My metaphor's stretching here. But always, it's not ideal to just bang your head against the wall over and 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 over again. You might have to do something different. I mean, you and I both had a weird way to build our publishing career. Most people did the whole, I'm going to write some short stories and get them published, and then I'm going to write a novel, and then I'm going to find an agent, and then I'm going to find a publisher.
Yes, the traditional through line, if one can be said.
Yeah. And then, you know, for us it was, well, there's podcasts. And that's how we built audiences before we ever sold anything. And it's hard to have people ask me how I got to where I am today because I'm like, it's not really a map that's easy to follow because first you got to go back in time to when no one was podcasting. But that was more of a, I wanted to be a professional writer and I was getting jobs in role-playing games. But I still wanted to write just straight fiction, and I was getting rejected. And so then I decided, hey, there's this podcast thing. Why don't I just throw my stuff out there and see what happens? And cool stuff happened. So you could say I quit sending out short stories, at least. I can't think of the last time I submitted a short story.
I know, right?
But that's not because I'm solicited all the time. I'm sometimes solicited, but I've got enough going on to where I'm not writing stories and throwing them out there. I'm also not a big short story writer. I don't have those punchy skills that you do, but I think the metaphor landed, so just leave me alone.
No, it's more the idea that I have punchy skills that amuse me. It had nothing to do with the way you articulate.
Oh, okay. But it's the hardest part here is trying to decide when it's good to step back. When you have to decide whether it is time for me to take another path or I'm just a big quitter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the theme here is quitting isn't necessarily quitting, you know, because the only constant throughout my last 15 years doing this is I was always writing stuff, you know, I was always doing something. I wasn't necessarily submitting or writing fiction or writing screenplays or podcasting, but I was always moving towards something.
Right.
And like you said, it's not a straight line. It's not a roadmap. Murr, our careers are Jeremy Baramy. That's what
they are. Oh, I'm so happy now. That's awesome. Yes, our careers are fucking Jeremy Baramy. I never want to get to the dot, though.
Oh, you don't
I never want to get
the
to the dot over the eye.
It's nothing, and sometimes it's Wednesday.
Or yeah.
Whatever it was. Yeah. But no, that's what it is, man. It's really knowing. It's persistence is all about knowing when to quit. That sounds like a quote.
Yeah, there's a t-shirt right there.
But it really is, man. Because like I was the same way. I sold some stories to like little webzines, and then I was mostly getting rejected, and I got rejected a lot for years. And then I was like, you know, what if I just took all these stories and started a podcast? Because that's a thing that exists now in 2005 or 6 or whenever it was. And first it was like, I did that to get exposure, and then I just started enjoying the medium. Mm-hmm. Enjoying the medium. I need to enunciate, we're on a podcast.
Yes.
A Hugo Award-winning podcast.
Motherfucker.
And Hugo Award-winning podcasters enunciate.
They do.
But yeah, I just started enjoying the medium, so I started writing things specifically for the medium and seeing what we could do with it and just having fun. And then, you know, that led into screenwriting for me randomly, which was a weird, odd thing. And then I did that for a while. And I quit writing fiction for a while to write screenplays. And then I quit writing screenplays to write fiction for a while. And it's just like there were years of gaps between all of the different things I've done, you know, from writing books to not writing books to writing TV to not writing TV to, you know, I worked in marketing for a year and wrote nothing. You know, of my own, or that was like really like fictional. I just wrote marketing stuff for a year, and it was challenging and creative, and I made money doing it, but like it took all my time, so I didn't write anything else, and that was okay. It served its purpose for the time, and it gave me the time to and the time and the resources to get back to writing the stuff that I wanted to write. You know, mm-hmm. it's Ted Danson would say, it's Jeremy Baramy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we just the idea that you can't quit and be persistent at the same time is not true. Like you said, the wall, Murr, walls are bad. Political commentary. And when you start banging your head against the wall, you can't listen to people. I mean, walls are bad. I don't mean to make a mockery of that. They're a bad thing. But you can't listen to people who tell you just keep banging your head against the wall. And if you stop banging your head against the wall, you're a failure and a quitter, and you're not being persistent anymore. Because the wall's going to win. Your head is made of meat, and the wall isn't, and the meat is going to lose. The meat is going to lose, Murr.
That's some deep shit right there, man.
That is some deep shit. So,
wow.
Like you said, it is about knowing when and how to quit, and you know, how to get to where you want to get to, and deciding that is really the thing. Like, so it always comes down to just deciding what you want to do, and then figuring out the path of least resistance to get there. And sometimes the path of least resistance is quitting the thing you were trying because it's not working and trying something else, you know. And you got to kind of give yourself the room to do that. I think so anyway, Murr.
Yeah, and experience will tell you when it's time to do that. Sometimes it's just, it's something we can't tell you. I've had people say, you know, should I keep writing this thing I'm writing or should I try something new? And really it's hard to answer that. You have to answer it yourself, but you just have to decide whether you've spent enough time on this.
Yeah, man, it's frustrating. I know it's frustrating because you just want answers to questions like that. You want someone to tell you what to do.
Yeah,
you know, And it just, that doesn't exist, man. Like, it took me so long to learn just that, too, by the way, which I guess is kind of a slight departure from what we're talking about, but I think it's a worthy one. Especially coming out to, like, coming out to L.A. is what taught me that. Because when I first got out here, and I knew no one, right, and I had no money, and I didn't know what to do to try to break into television, I would go to all these, like, free seminars. Anything I could get into for free, whether it was, like, a Q&A or a screening or a seminar to hear people talk, I would go to that just to, like, try to learn something useful. And what I learned from doing all of that is no one has any idea how they broke into the business, and they can't tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
It's amazing to watch. Like, I remember there was a panel with three, like, immensely successful TV writers. Like, I think the dude from Eureka and just a bunch of people who – and, like, there were 100 people there. All any of us wanted to hear was for one of them to explain how they broke into TV writing, and none of them could do it. I wish I could remember the actual phrasing and words and quotes and everything. I can't because it was years ago, but I just distinctly remember that is when it came to the subject of how do you break into the business, and several people asked, they just, none of them had a good answer, you know? And one of the reasons nobody has a good answer to that question is it always comes down to a very personal thing.
Yeah.
And especially like in the entertainment industry in Hollywood, it also comes down to who you know and what advantages you have. And nobody likes making that their story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to sit on a panel like that and be like, well, how did I break into the business? I knew Linda. Linda helped me get in the door. So I guess my advice to you is get to know Linda. She'll help. Like, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's the truth, man.
And you poor know, Linda, suddenly her email box is full.
Blows up. She's like, what the fuck, Steve? The guy's name wasn't Steve, but we'll go with that.
Oh, God,
but that's awesome. The truth, man. Like, nobody ever wants to list advantages they have that help them. It's like, well, my parents paid for me to go to USC screenwriting class, and then I got an internship based off the professor that was my mentor there, and then, again, Linda helped me get in the door. Like, it's all this shit that is not helpful because you can't go out and get parents that can pay for film school. You can't go out and meet the exact person that this person met that helped them along. And, you know, and also telling people, go ingratiate yourself to people that can help you with your career is kind of sleazy, shitty advice. You know, it's not, you can tell people, go network, go meet your peers and people you know will help you out.
There's a difference. There is a difference.
Yeah.
For one thing, you don't go and kiss ass, especially to, like, people you don't like.
Right.
And you don't get to know... You don't get to know Steve just so you can get to know Linda.
Right.
You know, you don't step on Steve to get to Linda. It's really just a matter of don't be a dick. Again, it's you meet people, you tell them about yourself. We're social creatures, you know? And it's hard. Like, for me, I built an audience podcasting, and Dong Wan, your agent, had emailed me and said, hey, do you want to get coffee at the next Worldcon? But the real foot in the door, my Linda, was Lev Grossman, because I was interviewing him the morning before the Hugos, and he asked me if he'd see me at the parties that night, and I said, no, I didn't have an invite, and he said, well, I've got a plus one. And so I was Lev Grossman's plus one, and I was standing in line for a drink, and that's where I met Davey, who became my editor at Orbit, because Dong Wan was kind enough to pass my manuscript to her when he quit. So it's like, well, Dong Wan would have had my manuscript anyway, and maybe he would have passed it to her, but doing my podcast, meeting Lev, hitting it off with him to where he would give me his plus one, and... you know, standing in line and running into Davey, that all helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just tough not having, because like the key to that is there was no ulterior motive there. It was circumstance.
Oh, right.
And you just put yourself in the position that you ended up being in for these things to happen to you. But you didn't start off with that going, I'm going to specifically do X, Y, and Z to put me in a position to meet Lev Grossman so Lev can help me out.
Yeah.
Because that would make you like a Bond villain.
But, so, there's the shittiest villain ever.
I know.
The Bond villain trying to get a book deal. All right. Step one. Corner Lev Grossman and get his friendship.
Step two. Step three. Profits.
Yes.
No, but it is.
Step two. Stand in line for a gin and tonic. Next to an Orbit editor. Uh-huh.
That's your catchphrase. That's your Bond villain catchphrase.
That's right.
Uh-huh. No, but it is. Just, and I feel bad when people want advice, because that's basically what it boils down to, is do things that will pay off later, but don't do them so they'll pay off later. Like, it just doesn't, it's not helpful at all.
Really, it's all about getting to know people who do the job you want to do. Be friendly to them. Learn what you can from them. And, you know, try to be memorable. In a good way. But, I mean, think about it. It's like, Matt and I are not... We did not set out and say, hey, I need a co-host for this podcast that I hope will win the Hugo one day. I gotta find the best person out there. Hey, there's that guy. He's friendly. He's charismatic. I'm gonna approach Matt. No, it's Matt and I were friends, and we had a good chemistry, and we decided to do this thing together, and that came from the friendship that started in, what, 06?
God, yeah. Now I'm just depressed. No.
And we didn't start out in 06 going, hey, you and me, one of these days, you know, in 13 years, no. We're there.
No, man, we just, it was a natural, nothing like, I mean, it would have been absurd to even think that way.
Yeah.
Like, we're both so nobody.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the same thing. It's like, I didn't go, you know, 14 years ago, I didn't go, I'm going to be friends with Merck, because a decade from now, she can introduce me to an agent.
Yeah.
It's just not how shit works. But
yeah.
To put yourself out there and connect with people with similar interests is really the best you can do, you know? And you just kind of hope that you don't go out hoping to plant seeds, but you hope it kind of plants a seed, and then later on, you know. And help people, and you helping people too is also a big part of that. Again, not to get anything from it, but just because it's the right thing to do, and good things will come from it if you put good stuff out there. It's just tough, man. I don't even remember how we got on this tangent at this point, but it's just it is a worthwhile one. I feel like, because that's all anybody wants to know, man. They just want to know how do I get there? How do I break in? How do I get the things that you have? And I ask myself about people who are about people who are doing better than me. And then I remind myself that there are people who want to know that from me, and I don't know how to fucking tell them. So nobody's going to be able to tell me how to get to, like, the next place I want to be. You just got to put yourself out there. And I feel genuine sympathy for everyone who hears advice like this and sits there and goes, I still don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, man. It's tough, but it's honestly the most real we can be with you about that kind of thing, you know?
And one of the things that makes me sad is the wrong word. I don't know what kind of emotion I'm looking for here, but hesitant to talk about my career in hindsight is, you know, I started podcasting in 04, the end of 04, and you know, I didn't start podcasting fiction until 06. And then I was going to self-publish a novel in, I think, 07, but I got a small press deal. And then nothing happened for me writing-wise until the end of 11, which was just the deal, which got the book out in 13. And so we're getting in on, you know, 7 years there, or no, 9 years from starting podcasting, and, you know, stuff didn't really start to roll until like 13, 14. So telling somebody, you know, start talking to people now, and maybe in 10 years you'll get a book deal. That it just sounds so fucking depressing to say that out loud. But it's not like nothing happens between now and that decade. I mean, lots of stuff happened.
Yeah. Life happens.
Yeah.
Your whole life happens. No, it does. It really does. And that's another thing is you can't measure and live your life only in those benchmarks or what you perceive to be those benchmarks. Yeah. You know, it's like, I wish I appreciated a lot of the experiences I had the last 15 years as I was racing to get somewhere else, mm-hmm. you know? And that's serious. That's real. Like, I know that sounds very existential and not entirely helpful, but I can't express to you how much in 15 years from now you will wish you had appreciated and really stopped to experience the things that are happening to you while you are trying to get to the place you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
That you will eventually get to in a decade. You know, it's just we had so many good times and so many cool experiences and just all like the cons back in the days, you know, when I was innocent and still enjoyed conventions because I hate them now and don't want to go. But like, you know, there was such an innocence about it. And I wish I had appreciated that more instead of looking at it like I'm only here to try to get somewhere else.
But you don't appreciate innocence when you're innocent.
Yeah,
because you're
true.
Innocent.
That wouldn't, yeah. Awareness would kill the whole thing.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to be bitter and jaded in 5 years. I better enjoy this now. Soon I will learn this is all a lie. So drink up, friends.
That's the dot in the Jeremy Baramy right.
Yeah.
That's
no
what
kidding.
On that dot above the eye. No, that's absolutely the truth. I guess there is no way to really do that. But, you know, just slow down, I guess. Slow down. Everything will come in time as long as you stick with it, even though you can quit things along the way as needed while you're sticking with it, to tie it back to our original point.
But,
conversely, Mer.
Yes?
And this is me segueing.
Go for it. I'm strapped in.
Because it's Ditch Digger. It's not a segue, unless we point out that it's a segue here in the Christmas tree farm off the lonely road of loneliness, which we are traveling. There are some times when you can't quit. Did you know that?
I did. I'm very well aware of that.
Are you very well versed in that? There are times when you would like to be, you know what? Fuck this. Just jauntily screaming, fuck this. And just not have to do the writing. You'd really like to like that to be a thing, but sometimes it's not, Mer. Do you want to talk about how it's not?
Well, sure. I mean, when it's your job, it's there's a freedom. Actually, because I was waiting to talk to my editor about this project, I haven't had anything big to write. And so I decided to start something new and shiny and just for me on NaNoWriMo. And I had fun with it, and I wrote all around it, and I ran into walls, and I went non-chronologically, and then I decided to restart it with a different chapter one, and I mean, it's a big fucking mess. And then when at the end of November came, I'm like, well, we'll put that aside, because Lord, that's a mess. But it was fun. And that was quitting I could do. Nobody's waiting for that book. Nobody cares. I'm just was just having fun.
That's a good quit.
And, you know, I may come back to it one day, but it was a good quit. Now, I as I mentioned, I have a book due in the middle of March. And so if I have a day where I'm just like, wow, I'm tired of writing in the next 3 months, well, I'm not really going to have that luxury of not writing. I can maybe take a couple of days off because everybody does. And you just realize you have to either double up the next day or just spread it out among the remaining days. But you can't do that too often. And that's not really quitting. That's just, you know, taking a breather. But it's a hard thing when, especially if you're the kind of person that likes to write when you're inspired. And you realize you can't do that once it becomes a job. And I think there's some famous quotes out there. I can't remember who it's attributed to, but the most inspiring thing to me is a deadline. Fitzgerald. Right. I don't know.
I think a few people have talked about this before.
Yeah.
You know, on Reddit. You know, Fitzgerald, oh. Reddit.
Yeah. I think Fitzgerald posted about it on Reddit.
And, it was totally cool. But no, it's the truth. Where, like, I write video games. For a living now, that's a thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't stop over the holidays. I don't know if you know that or not. They don't just stop making the video games because like it's 2 weeks before Christmas and you don't feel like writing them anymore.
Yeah.
You know? I was saying before we started recording, watching people tweet about the end of NaNoWriMo, you know, and kind of how that's it's over, so they're putting the things they're working on away, and they're not going to work on them anymore for a minute at least, you know. And it made me very resentful.
Like I just did?
Yeah, like you just did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get an exemption. You get a you get a local girl exemption.
Oh, God. Can we talk about how I'm Hugh Grant again? I prefer Hugh Grant over local girl.
You are. You are the Hugh Grant of local girls.
God damn it.
See what I did there?
I did. I did see that.
You were trying to get away from it, and I just tethered it. It was like the opposite of the movie Us. See Us if you didn't get that reference. It's a brilliant
film. Oh, yeah,
film.
I haven't seen it. Sorry.
How did Lupita Nyong'o not get a Golden Globe nomination? I'm just going to say it. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I'm not going to harp on it, but God damn it, dude. That's
I
just
have a theory.
Oh, well, no. I know why. Yeah. That's a rhetorical question. I know. Exactly how she didn't get a nomination. It doesn't make it any less inexcusable. God damn it. Yeah. Brilliant performance is plural, folks. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about?
Us. Oh, yeah. Local girl, Hugh Grant.
No, that wasn't. That's not. I was talking about how I resented everybody.
Yes, like me.
After NaNoWriMo, like Murr. But no, on a very real note. I feel like I'm pointing out a lot when I'm being serious and when I'm not, and that's never a good thing.
Well, we're trying to be humorous on this show. It's kind of our shtick.
Yeah, and we're trying to make it entertaining because we want to get nominated for a Hugo again next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I already talked about how November was. Did I talk about November being a tough month on the show, or was that before we started recording?
You did. You talked about it on the show.
I did talk about it on the show, so I already talked about that. So that's a thing. So I'm already burnt out from that. I also have a fair amount of, like, very real seasonal affective disorder going on, where, you know?
That dim light is a bitch.
The low lights of winter are upon me.
Yeah, that's why I brought that up with the opening.
Hindsight and retrospect and all that. But, some of it is physical. Like, winter is a tough month for me because I have chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And it really exacerbates that. My joints feel like they're full of broken glass right now. My sinuses go haywire. And when my sinuses go haywire, I have severe apnea, sleep apnea, so I can't really wear my mask, my nose piece, so I don't sleep well. So I'm in pain, and I haven't slept, and I've got shitty sinuses. All these things make it very hard to be creative and to make shit up. That's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
When your job is to make shit up from scratch, which my job is right now, like we're working on a new video game, like at the very earliest stages, like we're coming up with all the stuff. There's no like technical shit to do. It's just making shit up. That is very difficult as a day job, especially when you've got these exterior forces working on you. And I'm finding it really difficult right now. Like Monday was bad. Monday was like, I hated the whole world.
Yeah, I know. People like sent you a lot of pictures of animals.
Yeah, well, they sent me dog pictures on Twitter. I appreciate that, by the way. It's always good. But yeah, but like everybody was texting me to check on me, you included, which I appreciated. But it's just because like my whole job Monday was like make this stuff up, and I couldn't think of anything.
Entertain me.
Exactly, but it's just such a bizarre situation that I don't think people who don't do this kind of job really understand or appreciate. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's harder than other jobs. Like I am very aware that I get to sit in a room and just make stuff up for a living. I'm very privileged to do that, but it's also very hard because there's no like, it's not paint by numbers. It's not assembly. It's not, you know, I process data. All right. Somebody gives me something and I do a thing with it. And the conditions are preset on what I do with it. Like there's none of that. Mm-hmm. There's no guidelines. It's just like, there's nothing here. Fill it with something. We don't know what. You'll figure it out. It's just very difficult. So, but I don't have the option of like going, well, it's hard now, so fuck it. The muse isn't here. I'm not inspired. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, that's not an option. Like, your job is to fill the goddamn page. So I've been struggling a lot the last couple of weeks with that, with fill the goddamn page, even though you can't think of anything good and you don't feel inspired or creative right now. And that's a thing. So This is obviously leading to me telling you how to deal with that. And
I was looking forward to that, because when you said you wanted to talk about this, I thought, great, but I don't know how to fix it, so I hope you have a plan.
It's a really good peek into our process, I think, as ditch diggers, as we do this podcast. It's like, well, I hope she knows or he knows, because I don't have any fucking idea.
Let's talk about this problem everyone's having and no one knows how to solve.
Exactly. No, there. I mean, the thing is, I did. Like, to give you this example, like Monday. Oh, this actually ties back into the earlier thing. I love when this happens. Everything's coming together. So Monday, I did kind of just quit. I reached a point late in the day when I was like, you know what? This shit is not working, and it's not going to work, and I'm only making it worse on myself by trying to force it. So I took a step back, and I was like, okay. Whatever I got done today was what I got done today. It was shitty. I'll fix it tomorrow. And I had some tea, and I gave my brain a break, and I went to bed very early, which is really the only useful piece of advice you're going to get from this whole thing. Go to bed early, if you can. And I got up the next day, and I was like, okay, I gave myself that break. Now I need to build the goddamn chair. And I built the chair. I wrote all the stuff that I needed to write yesterday that I wasn't able to get done the day before that.
Built the chair? I don't think I know that one.
I just pulled it out of my ass. It's not an actual thing. But I think it's an apt metaphor. It's like, look, I can't sculpt right now. I don't have that kind of inspiration. But I can build a chair, because I know what a chair looks like. You know what I'm saying? It's like...
Ah, okay.
You know, it's that's kind of the metaphor I'm going for. It's like sculpting as opposed to building a chair. I have an idea of what a chair looks like. I know how to build a chair. I've got the skills necessary to accomplish this job. So I'm just going to build the best chair I can, as opposed to sculpting some kind of masterpiece when I don't have an idea for anything.
Yeah.
That's really the kind of mental divide or disconnect that you come to. It's like writing and creating is a talent, hopefully. I mean, you know, that can be a whole other episode. It is an ineffable thing, but it's also a skill. Storytelling, writing, illustrating, whatever you're doing, these are skills, and you build up a skill set over time. You know the mechanics of it. You know what makes a good story, what makes a good world, what makes a good character. So you have to approach it that way when you're just not feeling inspired, especially when it's a job. It's like, my job is to come up with something interesting that works for whatever situation that I'm in right now. So I just have to fall back on the skill set I've accrued over years of doing this and ask myself fundamental questions like, okay, what is the problem this character needs to accomplish? What needs to happen in this world to enable this plot? And just kind of construct it as if it were a chair. So
yeah. And sometimes you know what's going to go in one scene. So you can write that non-chronologically to get some words down and words that are needed.
Yeah, that's a really good one, too. Yeah, just picking something that you know you can start going on just to get something down. Having something down helps immensely.
Yeah.
That's a great... I think we've talked about that a little on the show before, but yeah. When you're stuck, man, and it's just a blank page and it's overwhelming you, like, just having something to work with, when you start developing those little chunks of words and you kind of scroll down them and you feel like you've filled stuff out a little bit... Oh my God, it feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you had nothing. So that's also a very good tip. Just picking a part of it that you can expound on, even if it's kind of out of order or whatever, just to kind of kickstart you. That definitely helps a lot. You're smart, Mer. You should do this for a living.
Hey, thanks.
I think. I mean, you know, I'm no life coach or anything. But yeah, and you know, you can apply this to everything if you're trying to, you know, because not everybody has a day job where their job is to create, and that's fine. But if you're listening to the show, you're trying to write something. So whatever you're trying to write, if you're having a little trouble through the holidays, whether it's seasonal affective disorder, whether it's there's a lot of holiday hoopla with family and whatever it is, these are all things that will help you that you can apply to whatever you're trying to write. If you're feeling a little overwhelmed or inspirationless or museless, and we'll all get through it, Mer. Like January will come no matter what. I mean, hopefully.
That is some truth right there. January is coming.
January is coming. I knew that was going to turn into Game of Thrones as soon as I said it. The new year is coming. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no escape. I mean, it's fine. Who the hell wants to stay in 2019? This year was terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's just a thing. So those are all things about quitting, Mer, about when you can quit and when you can't quit. And then there was a tangent in the middle there about nobody having any useful advice on how to break into any of these businesses.
Right.
But I feel like it all is interconnected at the end of the day, don't you?
It is. It's all about the business of writing.
No.
No.
The thesis emerges. No. Local girl says no.
Shit.
Oh, that's fucking funny, I think.
Do we have any goddamn Twitters?
We do, Mer. We do have Twitter questions. Somebody really liked Ghost Rider as a kid, so that's not a question, but I enjoy it because we talked about Ghost Rider on the last episode. Mm-hmm. So Jason asks on Twitter, "Hey, Ditch Diggers."
Hey.
And he used that. And I always appreciate it. Hey! She always gets me with that. Have I ever told you that? Like, she'll point at a hay truck or a hay bell, and she'll go, hey. And even after 10 years, it still gets me. I'm like, what? What happened? And it makes me feel like a moron every time. But anyway. Hey, Ditch Diggers. As a writer, we can write off Netflix book purchases, etc. as industry research on our taxes. Can we write off Patreon support of writing podcasts? It's a tax question, Mer.
My first thought is yes, but I think I might be doing some self-serving things there. I'm actually not sure. I think you can write off anything you want and hope they don't audit you. No, I'm serious. It's like you can... I know people who write off stuff that I wouldn't dare. And yeah, well. And I think... And it's not even like I think they're doing tax fraud. I just think they're reaching a little bit. But like you said, you're getting something out of it. If you went and bought my book, I should be writing. You could write that off. So if you support our podcasts via Patreon, that sounds like, as long as you keep good records, I will point out that the wonderful new U.S. tax law means that freelancers can only write off up to $10,000 of things, which sounds like a lot until you realize you're putting... Like, really travel bad. In there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, travel is a big one. But I, especially since my wife can no longer itemize because of the wall-building asshole and his new tax codes, I write off everything I can as a writer because I'm a freelancer, so I can still itemize. So anything that is even tacitly connected to my job, I will attempt to write off, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. And you should be able to. I'll just say that. I don't think it's a sleazy or duplicitous thing. Like, if you're seriously attempting to write and make income off it, if something is enabling or helping you in any way with your writing, like, that's a business expense. So, anything with... I'll say this as a rule. Anything with writing in the name, I would write that off. If it's a Patreon for a writing podcast, writing's in the name. You're a writer. Write that shit off.
That is good point.
I'm just saying. Not over Ned Stark on Twitter. Not over Ned Stark. Still, that's funny. This isn't a question, but fuck it. I've already gone into it. I've written a novel, and it's about this little black girl who is way smarter than her white male counterparts and is constantly saving their asses, and they all learn magic from a big gay wizard. # Ditch Diggers. I assume that refers to Harry Potter. Again, it's not a question, but just somebody tagged us for that.
Okay.
And I support little black girls who learn magic from big gay wizards. So I read it. What do we got? Alistair Kane. Dear Matt and Mer, do I need to have a social media presence first, or am I supposed to be published first and then work to grow my fan base? Sincerely, Alistair Kane.
Well, as we mentioned before, we both built up a considerable online presence before we ever got published, and I think that presence, you can't just get published for having a good online presence. Maybe you can once, or maybe they'll take that away from you once they realize that you're a Nazi. But I'm not implying you're a Nazi, I'm just saying it's happened before. But
local girl implies that you're a Nazi.
Anyway, so what was the question? Oh yeah, you'll want to build. I think if social media is something you want to do, then you should do it as soon as possible, and follow people that interest you, follow people who do the jobs that interest you, and talk to them on social media and be friendly and engaging.
Yeah, my we mentioned my agent Don Juan earlier. He had a good thread on author websites, and I think this is a principle that applies to social media as well. He said, Pim was eight, when do I need an author website? And his answer was, you need an author website as soon as you want people to know that you're a writer. So I would apply that to social media. If you want people to know that you're a writer, then get your social media going and use the goddamn Twitters. But you don't
Can I say, this is just a pet peeve, and a lot of people I know do it, a lot of people I respect do it, and a lot of people who are pros and make a lot more money than me do it, but for some reason, putting writer in your social media name or description always makes me feel squirrely. Maybe not your description, but I don't know, there's something about, like, just, I have the same response to the am writing hashtag. I don't know, it just rubs me the wrong way, and I can't articulate why. Matt, you talk now.
No, the name thing bugs me. Like, it's okay to put it in your bio.
Sure.
But, like, I feel you. People with, like, author, you know, Nick Cave in their Nick Cave. I don't know why I chose that name. But, like, people who put author in their, like, Twitter handles or their screen name or whatever, it weirds me out, too. I guess it just feels really generic to me.
Yeah.
You know? It almost feels like an author bot instead of a real person. It just smacks too much. You know what it is? It's too on the nose in terms of, this is my author brand social media account.
Oh, yeah.
People want to connect with you as a real person. Your goal should be to be a real person. And when you do that, it just kind of feels very much like I'm going to, you know, Nabisco's website or Coca-Cola's website. It just feels very impersonal and sterile and like I'm dealing with a brand and not a person. And that's not what anybody wants at this point in a social media platform. So I think that's why it bugs me. It may bug you for other reasons. Maybe an author Twitter handle killed your parents. I don't know. But like for me, that's I think that's why it puts me off.
So yeah, that's a better answer than mine.
I mean, it is your answer, right? I just expounded on it a little more, which is basically my whole career is like you do something smart and then I just do it a little more. That's really all. You are the wellspring, Mur. You're the wellspring.
Local girl becomes wellspring.
Local girl becomes wellspring. That's great. Loving the local girl jokes. Loving them. Do we have any email questions, Mur?
You'd think I'd have that queued up, don't you?
I mean, I feel like I gave you ample time not to, like, put it on main or anything, but, you know. Also, Mastodon is trending on Twitter. That has nothing to do with it. But it makes me happy.
Is it the social network platform or a dead, extinct animal?
I was, in my mind, it was for the dead, extinct animal. I like how it's dead and extinct. Like, one doesn't imply the other. Yeah. Oh, no, I think it's, like, for an album or something. I don't know. But in my mind, fucking woolly mammoths are trending on Twitter, and they should be. That was my filler, Murph. Was that enough?
Yes, I'm looking. There's a anonymous question that we still need to get a professional on to talk about. About troublesome people in and how to deal with it in
yes, we will do that in
behavior. We should talk about that and who to get on and stuff.
We will do that in the new year, this I vow.
Yeah. I mean, it was sent to us in May, so we probably should.
I mean, sadly, it's never not going to be an issue, so because people.
Yeah.
If you want to send us questions, though, Mur, which you should, because we know things.
And we'll probably get to it before too many months pass.
We will at this point. You can email us. Where can they email us, Mur?
MightyMur@gmail.com, and please put Ditch Diggers in the subject line.
Yeah, or you can use the goddamn Twitters with the hashtag Ditch Diggers, and I'll sift through it among all the people tweeting about British politics.
Yeah.
Which is a thing.
Good
and
luck,
should
Britain.
Be. A lot of shit going on over there right now, you know. A lot of wall building, metaphorically. Yeah.
But I mean, when they're
laughing stock of a leader, is making fun of our laughing stock of a leader. It's just, I feel like the stoned kid who just got his teeth pulled, just going, is this real life?
Well, I mean, you know, official presidential Twitter accounts tweeting pictures of him with his face on Thanos' body. Like, what do you do with that? How do we come back?
I thought it was Stallone.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought it was Stallone. Did he do Thanos
too? It was Stallone,
too?
And then, like, literally yesterday it was Thanos doing the snap. They tweeted his face on the body of a ruthless, genocidal, intergalactic dictator in the moment he lost for the second time while tweeting about how he's going to be reelected. So there was just so much, Mer. There was just an ungodly amount to unpack there. Point being, I feel like that's just an epoch of ridiculousness from which we can never return. So what do you do with it?
I got nothing. I'm
I know,
I'm just
to,
like...
I can literally feel you trying to process it and able to. And you're right.
You see so
right.
many Photoshop things on Twitter making fun of him, and I saw that picture, but I thought...
No, that was them. That was a blue check mark, real thing that they did. So
I wonder what it's like to be on his team. Okay, today you take his face and put it on Thanos. What? No, just do it, man. You know better than to ask what by now. You take what I say and you do it.
There's just a big sign in that office that says never ask why.
Yeah.
Like that's the guiding principle of
okay, here, take this nude of him and Photoshop in him farting daisies. What? No, just fucking do it.
Man, you went all the way to the end of the street on that one.
That's where I live, man. I live
It'll
on
probably
the end
happen
of the
tomorrow.
Street.
The box will hear it in this podcast and they'll make it a real thing and then they'll sell it on a t-shirt. So what can you do?
And that should be our money, man.
It should be. It was our idea. And that will lead into a whole other episode about pirated content online. But anyway, Mer, I think we've exhausted our stay here at the Christmas Tree Farm off
we have.
Loneliness, and it's time to get back on the lonely road of loneliness as we search for the promised place to where we will be led and find our new home.
Yes, one that is not associated with anybody who is charismatic and therefore ends
they
up
all
being troublesome.
Them. They all let us down in the end, Mer. All of them. Everyone.
Well, Jodie Foster hasn't, but I think we left her manor before.
Yeah, I mean, either way. It's just a better policy. We should just make up a celebrity who will never let us down.
Ooh, I like that. We'll talk about that later.
We should. We'll make it a contest. People come up with the fake celebrity whose estate we're going to squat on.
All right. My website and all of my products you can buy for Christmas presents or Hanukkah presents can be found at merverse.com. And I have science fiction books there and books, a book for a child, more than one child.
Which child?
I'm going to try again.
Chad, you know, that kid from down the street.
Yes.
You wrote a book just for him.
I did.
Local girl writes a book for exactly one child.
Yeah. I can't. Marketing's hard, man.
You are.
Merverse.com. Go there.
Merverse.com. God damn it. Go to Merverse.com. Buy all the merch and all the books.
And you can support us on Patreon.com/MightyMer. It's my username, but I share it with Matt.
She does. I get the table scraps. Whatever Mer doesn't eat, I get to eat. That's not true at all. It's a very it's a very even and fair division. But I just in my head you were like the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk, and I'm just like the little person under your table, just like waiting to get scraps. It was funny to me. You as a giant in the fairy tale is funny to me. I don't know why.
I don't know. You sell yourself now.
Okay. I'm on the goddamn Twitters, Matt FN Wallace. Don't go to my website because we're working to redesign and relaunch that, and we will in the new year, in 2020. And, you know, you can buy the books. I have books out there. I wrote the Sin du Jour series of books, beginning with Envy of Angels, going all the way through to Taste of Wrath. 7 of them out there, Mer, that you can buy. as well as my Lucha Buddy Cop Supernatural Adventure Crime Thriller, Rencor, Life in Grudge City. That's out there, too. You can buy that. Make me some extra scratch for the holidays. I wouldn't object to it. And I have so much crap coming out next year, Mer. I didn't put anything out this year. I did not have a book out this year. But I'm okay with that because I have all the things coming out next year. It's going to be amazing.
You want to talk about what you have coming out next year?
I really can't yet. I mean, I have Savage Legion coming out next year, July 22nd, I believe. That's been announced, so I can talk about that. I can't talk about the other stuff yet, but that's a definite one. I think you can technically pre-order it now. We haven't, like, revealed the cover or done a thing yet, but if you want to, I mean, I'm not going to say no, for sure.
I'm going to look on Amazon right now.
You should. I think it's on there. My mother texted me yesterday and was like, yeah, I pre-ordered another 5 copies of your book.
That is awesome.
I was like, Mom, you don't have to do that. She was like, I know.
Yep, it's the title's released on July 21st. I didn't know that.
Is it July 21st?
That's what Amazon says.
Do I have that correct? I do have that. I just remembered it wrong. I have that on my Twitter right now. It is July 21st, 2020. Savage Legion, the first novel, Mer, in my epic new epic fantasy trilogy, or anti-epic fantasy, as I'm calling it, because I take apart the whole goddamn genre in these books. But yeah, so that you can pre-order that, or you can order the books that you can read now. Either way, folks, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do.
You can pre-order it on Amazon, but there is no cover.
There is no cover. There is a cover, Mer. It just
I've seen it.
The cover is amazing. You have seen it. I sent you the cover. It is an amazing cover, and when it is released, people will tremble, Mer. They will tremble beneath its mighty aspect.
They will.
Anyway, I shilled for way too long. Apparently, I'm bad at shilling, too. But there you go.
All right, are we going to try to do one more before the end of the year?
Yes, I think we absolutely are.
All right, so we're not going to say any of those happy holidays because we'll see you before them. So
we'll see you before them, and we'll answer more questions, and we'll read the article that one person sent us, and it's going to be a good time, Mark. We're going to get down.
All right. Uh-huh.
Local girl says,
You can support us at patreon.com/mightymur.
Ditch Diggers!
Theme song by Devo Spice, devospice.com.